Joining me now to talk about a very interesting trade deadline, to say the least, for the Memphis Grizzlies, the Executive Vice President of Basketball Operations, Mr. John Hollinger. And so, John, we're 24 hours or so removed from the chaos. Mm-hmm. And when all's said and done, Tyreek Evans is still a Grizzly, mm-hmm. against a lot of odds, I would say. Mm-hmm. And you guys did do a deal involving James Ennis, Bryce Johnson, getting a second-round pick for the future. To the Tyreek situation, how close were you guys to getting the deal? And can you take us through the room and the process of sorting out what you got, what you didn't get, and why you decided in the end not to do anything?
Yeah, sure. So I think obviously things started getting warm right around the time the team left for the trip to Indiana. And so we made a decision at that point that it would be prudent to pull him out, because we didn't know exactly what we might get, but we thought it would be foolish to risk him getting injured and not getting that. And the deeper we got into conversations, the more we realized that there was just a heavy degree of reluctance really around the league, and we saw to part with much of anything in terms of draft assets. And that was really different from the deadline even 2 years ago, where we basically turned Courtney and Jeff into 6 second-round picks, and pretty good second round, 5 of them pretty darn good ones. And in this case, we weren't offered either the quantity or the quality that we had originally expected. So we reached a point where we're sort of looking at, there were several teams interested, and so we had different scenarios up on the board. You just reach a point where you're looking at it and you're like, is anyone here excited about any of this? and the answer was really no. So we were still talking to Tyreek at the same time and his agent, and we understood, I think, that he liked it here and wasn't necessarily itching to get out or anything, and hopefully can continue to be a part of this, you know, going forward, depending on how things go after the season and whatnot, and obviously. But when it got to that point, it was like, we don't actually have to do this. Like, we can pull back and go ahead with Tyreek and see where this leads. And the opportunity cost is negligible at that point, given what teams are offering us.
Tyreek gets pulled off the court, essentially, in mm-hmm. Indiana.
Yeah.
Says his goodbyes to Mark and the people, and everyone's saying, hey, you know, this is it.
Yeah.
So how close was that? I mean, that typically is an indication in years past that something is imminent or close.
Things are pretty close. Yeah, probably the last time we did that was with Tayshaun in New Orleans 3 years ago, where he actually played in the game, though. But where we were close on something, we had to kind of go out on the court it was a little different, because we thought we weren't as close to the finish line as we were with Tayshaun's situation at all. But we felt the pot of water was roiling toward a boil, we felt like, so we should, you know, take some action. And with the team being out on the road for a week, I think there was a presumption that by the time the team got back, we'd probably have something done. And it just never got any further beyond that point, I guess, is all you can say to that. It's hard, because obviously there's 20 different things I could tell you that I can't tell you about this, so I have to speak about this in certain terms. But
I think our listeners kind of know that there are certain things you, A, don't want to reveal, B, can't by rule reveal, and C, aren't at liberty for a number of different reasons to reveal. So there is a certain, you know, delicacy to this whole process. So I appreciate you being to your credit, as candid as you can possibly be, generally speaking, when all this stuff goes down. So I know there's limitations and all that. I got you there. To the extent that you can talk about it, how much did the extension that Lou Williams signed, the amount of money that it was, mm-hmm. an indicator that's probably going to end up being a deal that's lower than the mid-level. We don't know exactly what that will be, but in all likelihood, that's going to end up being less than that. Did that change the calculus for you guys with regard to Tyreek's future and change how insistent you would be on getting rid of him?
You know what's funny is our first reaction was like, okay, now the offers are coming in, you know, because he was off the market, right? And it just didn't happen that way at all. And in retrospect, probably the Clippers saw the same thing we did. In terms of what the trade market was going to be this February, and they were in a position, obviously, with Lou Williams' contract where he was extension eligible, so they were able to. Tyreek's on a 1-year deal. It's not eligible for an extension under the CBA, so we couldn't do that. That you would think that helped dictate them going in that direction.
So for you guys, though, did that change your thought about what it means to keep Tyreek? Obviously, you can't speak specifically to any contract offer that you are going to be thinking about with Tyreek. I can tell people from an informational standpoint, you guys would be, you know, most likely limited to a mid-level exception, mm-hmm. based on where you're going to be cap-wise. Yeah. I can tell people that you may not be able to. I can, and tell them that, you know, because of his contract situation and the fact that there's no bird or early bird rights, your offer will be similar to other offers around the league. The fact that you could maybe potentially give him a 1+1, mm-hmm. and get him into early bird territory, mm-hmm. these kinds of things that would crop up now that Lou Williams' contract is set where it is, does mm-hmm. that then say, okay, well, maybe there's something here that we could explore?
Right. I'll back up from a little from that point. I mean, I'm not going to negotiate contracts on your show, but
I wish you would.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. But we knew, even before Lou's extension, that money was likely to be tight for next year. And I think one of the things you saw at this deadline, the teams that were trying to move off of money for next year were generally unsuccessful. Moving off of 18-19 money and getting picks were seemingly the two most difficult things to pull off at this deadline. So I think even before that extension, we had an idea of what the monetary situation was going to be this summer, and I think that extension probably reinforced that for us to an extent. But every situation is different. We don't know exactly what this summer holds. We're not in other teams' huddles, so we'll see.
The fact that he comes back and, under the grounds and the way that it all went down, does this now kind of put pressure on you guys to get the deal done? Do you have to do it? I mean, considering that you didn't get anything for Tyreek, you know, the idea that being something is better than nothing, unless you keep him, does that put pressure on you guys to get the thing done?
Let me put it this way. I will not rue the opportunity cost of, you know, not having, I don't know, the 50th pick in 2020 or whatever, because I mean, that's really like the type of stuff that was on the table. It's hard for me to really bash my head in that I missed out on that, especially when we're in a pretty good situation with picks going forward. So that was one of the calculations we made internally, was that there's just not a lot being missed out on here.
To the extent that you can talk about the awkward play of draft pick being good, being bad, mm-hmm. lottery, mm-hmm. obviously it's a very tight situation down at the bottom where mm-hmm. you guys are, I think, currently fifth as we record this, but that changes moment to moment because everyone's so tight. Tyreek has obviously been far and away your statistically best player and mm-hmm. is very likely to contribute to winning, mm-hmm. which some fans and people thinking about the pick would say, maybe that's not so great. How do you balance that out and say, you bring him back and you're going to have to play him, and he's going to probably help you win games? How do you look at that?
Well, I appreciate everyone's concern about us running roughshod over the league. We've won 2 road games since Mike got hurt, so it's a little bit of an unusual perspective, but I appreciate it all the same, your confidence in our roster. I get it. I just think to accomplish the things we want to accomplish with the guys we have, with the younger players we have, who at least a few of which have to be key players for us next year, to get where we want to go with them will inevitably require us to play well enough to probably win some games.
Do you have an internal track of
I mean, like,
do you know, like, what do you have a win total that you think is like, this is going to be the worst record in the league? This is going to be, do you guys have, I mean, I know you probably do, but I mean, do you have a threshold here?
I think, you know, I think we all have an idea in our head that regardless of what happened, I mean, if you just look at our team, look at our results and project out a little bit, there's sort of a, how can I put this?
Ceiling?
Yeah, it's a tricky topic to talk about, Peter, but
you're saying that there's maybe a limit to the success that could theoretically be had even in a best case scenario.
At both ends, I would say a ceiling and a floor. I think there are some teams that will do some things that we aren't willing to do. And that was the case where regardless of whether made a trade or not. So at the end of the day, you, regardless of what happens, you need to get lucky to be at the top 3, especially if you don't have the worst record in the league, which is not something that we ever thought was likely for us in any scenario. And I would hope actually we don't. We would have to fail on some of our other goals to end up there. I get why people are looking at it that way.
So I think what you're saying is there are going to be some very aggressive teams at the bottom of the league who are going to be doing some things that will try to really make sure that they have a great opportunity to get as best draft picks they can, and these are things you probably can't or don't want to do, as you have said. So that you think there's the it will change a little bit over the next couple of months, and I think that's probably fair to predict. We've seen that certain teams, I think, out in the desert was an excellent example of a team that really seems to be committed to this process, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And that's I get you can't, like I said, you can't speak to certain things. So
of deserts, Peter. The deserts all over the place.
The Sahara, the Gobi. There, it's true. I'm talking all different sorts of teams and places and different leagues, even, John.
Okay.
Going forward, you talked about the money situation around the league and kind of, you know, just the market is different than it was, quite a bit different than it was a year, certainly 2 years ago. Did you guys have a mandate from ownership that you couldn't take on money, that was just a non-starter no matter what? Or would there have been a situation where you could have done a deal, if it was a good enough deal, you would have taken on future money, you just didn't find that deal?
You're talking about money for 18, 19?
Right.
Yeah, we weren't excited about the prospect. One of the things we really anticipated happening that just never happened was somebody coming in and saying, okay, here's some really good draft assets, but there's money attached to it. We really thought that was going to come up, and it just never reared itself. There were one or two cases where there was like bad offers that also had money attached, right? But like there wasn't that that scenario, because it was something that we had talked about quite a bit internally, you know, how we would react to that, how we would value future money and whatnot. It was just never a scenario that really got in play. I can't speak to why that is. But
you weren't mandated necessarily to say, like, you can't take on this, you can't take on that.
No, I mean, Robert's been pretty open with us that if the deal makes basketball sense, and if it makes sense in terms of managing a salary cap, that just the issue of writing the check has never been an issue for us, thank goodness, in my six seasons here, which, I gotta say, I mean, in a market like this is a real blessing, because I know there are other groups with other teams in markets that are bigger than this one that is not the case. So
you guys have written some big checks.
That has never been an issue for us. I think you've seen we've been pretty close to the tax line almost every year. We were a room team last year, so we weren't last year, but it's just never been a constraint on us. And
you guys have been top five in payroll a couple times, and I mean you've been at or near that level for most of your time here.
Yes. Like I said, if the basketball made sense, there was no obstacle as far as what next year's payroll would be or whatever.
So the other deal that was done, Bryce Johnson comes in. What does Bryce bring to the table? Because you guys have guys that look fairly similar to Bryce in terms of, you know, what the profile, age, et cetera. Is he a guy that you guys think highly of, that you looked at and you said, okay, there's something here?
Well, obviously when we did the deal with Detroit for the draft pick, I mean, there was,
right.
You know,
yeah.
they need.
Right,
they,
the other things involved.
Yeah.
The second
yeah,
round pick.
Yeah. That, as for Bryce, I think he's just a guy that hasn't really gotten a lot of opportunity, so we're going to be able to take a good look at him. The one thing he's shown, a lot of people probably familiar with him at North Carolina, the one thing he's shown since then in the G League is an ability to step out and stretch the floor and hit threes. So we're a little intrigued by that. We'll get a look at him and we'll, you know.
Just give it a shot.
We'll see how it goes and take it from there. So he's hopefully going to be – I think he might be stuck in that blizzard in Michigan right now, so hopefully we can get him in here, get a few days with him before the break, and see where things go. You're correct. I mean, obviously we have a lot of bigs right now, and that's probably going to be something that resolves itself down the line here one way or another. But
well, you've always said that – I bring that up because that's been your philosophy. I know you in particular – you know, if there's guys that are all somewhat similar and, you know, throw some numbers at the problem and see if something doesn't happen. You may find something that you didn't necessarily expect. You know, you may go through and competition among them, whatever it may be. It makes some sense that there could be, you know, something that shakes out in the middle of that.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I mean, we're going to look under the hood here and see what we have. And then we'll see, you know, see where this goes. Contractually, his option was not picked up by the Clippers, and then that actually carries over to us if we were to go forward with future years. So that could be tricky for us if he plays well, but on the other hand, that's a good problem to have, right? So we'll see.
It's a little bit like the situation with Tyreek and all these other. I mean, if you end up in these kinds of situations, it means that you've found some guys that were good. Do you look back, the deals that you guys did, the Ben McLemore deal, Jermichael obviously had a difficult saga with his restricted free agency and just the way the market went. Do you look back now and say, man, if we could have flipped those deals, could have done Tyreek a little bit differently? You know, how far along do we wait to judge these deals? Because there certainly has been a fair bit of, you know, backlash on some of them.
Well, I mean, Tyreek, we're getting punished in a way for signing too good a deal, so it's hard to kick myself too much for that one. Jermichael, I mean, Jermichael, we have a descending number on him, and we're still, you know, it's all systems go for him as far as being our starting four. He's played really well the last month.
Was the injury the big issue?
He came back, you know, after not being with us in the summer, or I shouldn't say not being with us. I mean, he was doing some stuff on the court, but it's different when you're not signed. And so didn't really have much training camp. Injured the first game. I just think it took a while to get everything back from that. And now you've seen, really, if you go back to the New York game, you really see, like, you go back and watch that game and you're like, okay, that's Jermichael Green. That's Jermichael Green. And you saw even last game, you know, flying in for the tip dunk, just you know, playing with that energy again up and down the court. So I think we're really pleased with where he's headed. I think you look at his deal, I think that's a good deal in this market. I don't have an issue there. You know, but Ben obviously has not been able to contribute as much as we had maybe hoped, and so we just have to keep working with him and see where it goes.
It's a tough situation because you have to, you know, you have to take a few risks and roll the dice here. And some of those dice rolls have gone well. Particularly, you guys have had a real knack for finding guys, you know, second rounders and undrafted guys, and Dylan Brooks is an excellent example of that. Ivan Rabb is really starting to come on. Is the process of finding those guys, have you done anything differently with regard to them? The success rate for those guys seems to be quite a bit higher than the success rate on the upper end of the spectrum. Is there a difference in the evaluation?
I don't think so. I think we just, you know, we benefited from last year's draft being so deep, and the fact that we had high quality future seconds that we were able to use to get in there. I differentiate that from what maybe we were offered yesterday, because it's an important distinction. Because really, I mean, we have Dylan and Ivan because of Courtney, and we have Didi because of Jeff, and then we have Andrew, who we got at 44 when we did the deal with John Lohr. When you can get in that top half of the second round, we felt like you can get value there. And I think we've shown that. Now, unfortunately, I'm trying to think, we've had three firsts since the time we were here. Jordan, obviously, with his knee, that kind of went off the rails. You know, Wade will take our lumps on. Jarrell's still here and still developing. TBD, as they say. Yeah, exactly. I guess even, you know, you look, though, even in the second half of the first round, I mean, the hit rate around the league isn't, and you've seen it with other teams. I mean, I think even in these last few days, you saw a lot of bait being cut, so to speak. You know, we're just happy that we've been able to find players in some other places too, to maybe make up for what we haven't gotten from the first round the last few years. You know, not just the guys we got in the draft, but you know, Jermichael, Wayne, we'll see where he goes. You know, we'll see what Mike Henry can do, and some of these players. I guess I'm going back now. Yeah, we pulled some other players in the G League too, but they've moved on to greener pastures now.
Well, I remember, I mean, you know, 2 years ago you had to pull almost every player from the G League because the roster was...
Every single player in the G League ended up on our team that year. And ironically, that's the only year, I think, that we didn't come up with a rotation caliber NBA player out of the G League. My first year we got Willie Reed, then we got James Johnson and Seth Curry my second year. We got Jermichael the year after that. We got Whiteside that year too, that's right. And you know, we got Wayne last year, and then we'll see, we still got a couple months here.
And that's just a pure quantity situation alone. The G League itself too, since you're talking about it, I wanted to ask you, we're, you know, most of the way through the first year with the hustle here, excuse me, as opposed to in Iowa and the way things have gone. How was that process gone? Has it gone the way you expected? What's the difference having it here versus there?
Oh, it's so much. Just the ability to seamlessly move guys back and forth. I mean, it wasn't even like a short trip to Iowa. It was two flights. You lost a whole day just sending a guy back and forth. And our systems are so much more cohesive just because of geography, just because they can be. It's different when you're just watching video or on a phone versus like JB and Sip see each other all the time, you know, and can talk about things. We're able to watch them practice. We're able to monitor much more closely what's going on. Obviously, we drive down to South Haven on, you know, we'll be down there tonight again, see Kobe and Mike play. It's just so much more immersive than what we were able to do in Iowa. And that's no disrespect. They did a real nice job up there. It was a really nice G League city. It just wasn't that conducive to operate there from Memphis, Tennessee.
The geography is just, it is what it is.
Yeah, exactly. And the flights and the flights. We have a really good setup, I think. I think it's been really helpful. And with the two-way rule now, I think it's almost essential. Like you really need to keep that team in your backyard to me. It's so much better in managing like even short-term situations. When you have a back-to-back, a couple injuries crop up and just, you know, you can go straight to the bullpen and just the logistics are a jillion times easier.
Do you like the two-way?
I do. I think it's given us a lot of options where in previous years we were in situations where it was like you have to cut James Ennis because you're out of bigs. You know what I mean? Or you have to apply to the league for a roster exemption and bring in a guy who doesn't know your system or anything. I think this is a way more effective way to manage an NBA roster through the course of the season while still giving the same guys the same level of opportunity. And, you know, and honestly, for this class of player, most of them end up making more money this way than they would off, say, 1 or 2 10-days. So I think it's something that works for everybody. I hope the players and agents feel the same way. But certainly for us, I think it's been a good thing.
Has it changed G League scouting?
Sort of, yes. Because we were scouting players, like at the showcase, we were scouting players to sign to the two-way. Right. You know, we were watching Mike Henry's games up there, knowing that he was a main target for us He led the showcase in games played, by the way. Interesting stat, because he played the two for his other team, and then we brought him right in. He was the only guy to play 3 games that weekend.
Get a trophy.
Yeah, exactly. World record. It does change how you scout the G League a little bit, and then you spend a little. It's not that you don't scout the two ways from other teams, because you still have your eye on them in case they become available or whatnot. But you're more apt to focus on a player who's unaffiliated. That's always the case. So it does change how you scout it at the margins, I would say.
Are we, not that you would have any inside information on this or anything, but just out of curiosity, do you think in 5-10 years we're going to go to a fully one-to-one where 30 affiliates, 30 teams, we're close, and we will be extremely close in the next couple of years? Portland's kind of in the holdout on this whole thing, but will we get there, and will that be a situation where you can actually have a real minor league in the fullest sense of the word, where injury guys could come back at the G League versus coming back in the NBA? I mean, I think Isaiah Thomas this year would be a good example of a guy that really could have used the Canton charge much more, you know, than he did the Cleveland Cavaliers. I think that might change the whole story of this whole trade deadline if that had been the case. Mm-hmm. Do you think we get to that point 5-10 years down the line?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're 98% of the way there already. We used it for Ben this year to rehab him in South Haven. I think that's already happening. You're seeing it, you know, the Spurs sent Tony Parker to Austin for a couple games. Like, that's just, it's becoming part of the drill that's what you can do to do a rehab rehab assignment, and so you're not just dunked into the water in the middle of an NBA game after you've been out for 2 months. I think that's a really healthy thing. Whether we'll get actually 30 is, I'm not privy to, I guess, the machinations behind that. I mean, 28 or 29 is right around the corner, though. I don't even think it's 5 or 10 years. Yeah. The only question is whether we get the full 30.
Yeah, I think the reason I think that's just important, if you get the full 30, then at least you have now a mechanism to maybe the next CBA go-around, you could create a little more environment for a guy coming out of high school to have a better domestic option. He still has that option. Guys occasionally will do it, but not so much domestically. It's still foreign. You know, money-wise, there may be an easier mechanism to find that. And I'm sure for you guys, I mean, college is a great way to scout because you have a great idea of level of opposition, you know, great atmospheres, all this stuff. But would that would change the calculus about how guys could think about their own personal careers, right?
So you're not happy with negotiating this summer's contracts. Now you want to do the next CBA?
Yes. I want the whole thing, John. I think we – let's. But I mean, if you're a talent evaluator, and I think – because that's like –
I'll actually answer your question. I'm just being a smart aleck. But
I fully endorse your smart aleckness. That's fine.
I could see it going that way where it becomes more of a legitimate option for guys who come out of school. And I don't even necessarily think you need to get to 30 teams for that to happen. Now, whether you could put things in the next CBA, first of all, the next CBA isn't until like we're going to be like 90 by the time that thing is done again. But I could see something like that. You know, they're talking about different machinations of how to do the one and done rule, and I think that will weigh heavily on what types of options would be available for guys in the G League. But we'll see, Peter. We'll see if it changes my European scouting too. You know, if they shifted a year earlier, you know, I might be going to some real out of the way places.
You do like an out of the way jaunt from time to time. I mean, you're a bit of a cultural guy, so you enjoy that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I do enjoy that stuff. Once in a while, those are fun, but you know, Athens and Madrid are pretty nice too. I've come to learn.
I think it's always nice to go visit some of the Eastern European outposts and just check in and see how things are going out there. So to kind of wrap this thing up, fans, the number one question I get all the time, and I you can help with this. People really want to know, like, what's the organizational chart?
Mm-hmm.
What's the structure? Like, you guys, when you guys make these decisions, like, if you're at an office or a corporation or whatever, you have the tree of like, bing, 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 here's what we do. People want to know, how does that process work? Because it's a little opaque from the outside.
Well, to me, it's like we've been saying the same thing and just nobody believes us. So I don't know what else to say. Like unless fine, there's a little yellow man who comes out and,
say it one more time.
Okay, there is a little yellow man who comes. No, Chris is in charge of basketball operations, and Ed and I, obviously, our job is to give him advice, and he makes a final basketball recommendation, and then, as with every single team in the league, it's subject to ownership approval. Robert has not stopped us from doing one thing that we've recommended, so that's
so you guys discuss it amongst yourselves. You have your methodology, Ed has his methodology, different approaches perhaps, but the same in product. And then Chris comes into play. Chris takes it to Robert. Robert thumbs up, thumbs down, and there you go, right?
Yeah, and obviously that's a huge oversimplification. We have scouts, we talk about the coaches that's how it works.
Is your process any different from anybody else in the league? There has been this perception for whatever reason, that things in Memphis are a little bit more muddled than elsewhere? With your knowledge, and you obviously negotiate with a lot of different teams and different folks, is it any different here than there?
I don't think we're more muddled at all. I think we're more collegial. I think Chris, to his credit, doesn't have to own every single idea, and for that reason, we're able to bounce a lot of things back and forth. But at the end of the day, I mean, Chris is making that call, and you know, that's to me that part is normal throughout the league. I mean, at the end of the day, it has to be somebody's call on the basketball side. And, you know, I think probably previously here there was a little more of a case where different sides were pulling at each other and trying to curry favor with the top guy. But that's just not how it's been here in the time I've been here.
So how much that's reported is about what goes on here? I'm not going to say you're like, you know, glued to the whole thing. You don't know what everybody reports all the time, but you get a feel for what's out there, mm-hmm. generally speaking. How much of that is representative of reality and how much is just utter fabrication?
You mean what people say about us or what people say about other teams in general? Or
you.
What people say.
You can speak to what's true or false about you. You can't speak to what's true or false about, you know, somebody else necessarily, but I'm saying from what you know about what's reported about you.
John Hollinger or us, the Grizzlies?
You, John Hollinger, and us, the Grizzlies.
What's reported about us? I don't know. I mean, what's been actually reported versus just what, I mean, random people idly speculate. I mean, I do feel like everyone's looking for a boogeyman that is not there, and until they find, they're convince you can't prove that something doesn't exist is the problem. Like, how do you can't prove the absence of something? So I'm at a little loss that way. But I've been in the media. I mean, I understand. You know, people like to speculate, and what is seen on the outside is a subset of what goes on inside, and not necessarily a representative subset, because different people want to display different things to you. So I get all that.
Every time that we get a chance to talk, you know, you're always as candid as you possibly can be, and I appreciate that. And I appreciate that this is, you know, it's a strange scenario. So I thank you for helping walk us through what happened to the extent that you can, because it's very helpful. I will say that, and I appreciate that.
We're done already?
That's it.